Aloha, everyone, and welcome to Going Shamanic. My name is Jennifer Ingracio, and my medicine name is Snowhawk, and I'm your host today for this show on Death Midwifery. This show is pre-recorded, so we won't be taking callers. There's a movement going on in the world that until recently was not particularly well known by mainstream society. Last year, we interviewed Stephen Jenkinson from Orphan Wisdom on our show. His work in teaching people to live and die well has struck a chord for many people. Death cafes are cropping up in cities all over the world, and people want to know how to live, die, and grieve well. Unsatisfied with the big business of pharmaceutical and funeral companies and what they have to offer, more people are looking to cross over in ways that are reflective of the way they lived. They want to be able to talk about death and dying in intimate, meaningful ways. This past month, I lost a friend and mentor, Grandmother Ann Dickey. Ann was a grandmother, sister, mother, wife, visionary artist, dear friend, and many other things to so many different people. I was so thankful to have had such a wonderful elder to look up to during the early days of my shamanic studies. Anne was naturally spiritual and knew that she was connected to all things. It was her dream that more children, along with their parents and or guardians, experience ceremony as a way to develop their higher selves, connect with the natural world, and learn from and about each other. So in 2008, Catherine Inksetter, Anne and I embarked on the journey to create the book, The Magic Circle, Shamanic Ceremonies for the Child and the Child Within. Anne's fabric art showed how young at heart she was and set the tone for the book. Working alongside her was such a pleasure and a gift in my life. At a time when most elders are retiring and winding down, she instead delved more deeply into her inner creative and spiritual aspects to get out into the community and make a difference in the lives of others and put her inspiring art into the world. What a role model. Anne's medicine name was Shining Waters. This is a sacred name that describes what a person's life purpose is. I had the honor of witnessing Anne live the beauty and the grace of this name by being authentically who she was in the last decade that I knew her. A year ago, Anne found out that she had a medical condition she was not likely to recover from. In true Anne style, she was determined to stop fighting death and embrace it instead. We had many wonderful conversations about living well. It was important to Anne that she die in a way that reflected the way she lived. She researched environmentally sound funerals, home funerals, and ways of crossing over that echoed her deep spiritual connection to the universe. And I admired her openness around the topic and the way she included me in her plans. In fact, she included all of her loved ones and relished the time spent with those she loved the most in the last year of her life. On July 8, 2016, in the early morning, her favorite time of day, Anne died at home, surrounded by those she loved the most in the world. Although my heart is heavy, not only with grief, but with the tremendous gratitude I feel for the gifts she brought into my life, I find myself thanking her for another reason. Openly talking about her dying helped me grieve as I walked along beside her on the journey. I was able to say all the things I wanted to say to her. She knew how loved she was, and it also brought me to a deeper place within myself where I was able to make death an ally. Anne reminded me of the many shamanic teachings we'd had over the years on death being a natural part of the life, death, and rebirth cycle. She reminded me that she was looking forward to being an ancestor and contributing to this world from the other side. I love that Anne called spirit the great mystery. She was a naturally curious person, and she was wise to know that humans can never know the full story of why we are here. And as I write this, I find myself wondering what mysteries have been revealed to her since she crossed over. And I imagine how thrilled she is to be on this next leg of her adventure, even as we who loved her grieve the fact that we will never get the chance to hug her or to be in her physical presence again. And I find myself in awe of how grieving feels a lot like living well, that all these emotions and thoughts can be experienced at the same time without contradiction. I dedicate this show today to Grandmother Ann Dickey and to all who love her and are grieving. Today's guest knows a thing or two about death and dying. She asserts that, quote, death is a natural and sacred transition, one that every human being will experience, yet it is something we're often in denial about and avoid due to living in a death-phobic society. Finding our own relationship with death empowers our lives and supports the ones we love, who go before us, and those we leave behind, unquote. Wanda Buchleitner-Garstad is the owner of Walking Soul Wisdom. Her passion as a death walker and psychopomp and death midwife is to help people find their own personal relationship with what death looks like, to guide and support the process to settle the fear of the unknown. Wanda supplies the awareness, tools, and ceremonies to discover a healthy, earth-based way of honoring ourselves and our loved ones as we step into the mystery. Welcome, Wanda.
Thank you, Jen. It's such an honor to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
Oh, it's our pleasure. Well, I wanted to jump in with the questions here because there's a lot I want to ask you, and some of it comes from your website. Some of it comes from knowing you for the years that I have known you. You say that you've began seeing spirits and energies in many different forms at a young age. What was that like for you, and what did you do with what you were experiencing at the time?
So I did any number of things and run the gamut of emotions from the experiences that I had, from fear to acceptance to wonder. And with each experience became a deeper and deeper connection to spirit, whether I knew it or not.
Mm-hmm. And so, like, how did you navigate that? Like, I'm wondering, did you tell anybody? Or, because I mean, I work with kids, and sometimes they experience things that they either try to tell their parents, and their parents are like, you know, you're just imagining things, or then they keep it all together because they don't know how to approach the subject with parents that may not see and experience the same things they do.
Yes, that's very true, and especially something as unknown as that. My parents dealt with it the best way they could. Their concept of God, we weren't churchgoers. I grew up in a family in the country, a rodeo family and a ranching family. And what they told me was, if you want to talk to God, then you jump on your horse and you ride out into the woods, and that's where God is. I still actually do that. Mm-hmm. And it is one of the most beautiful ways to connect to spirit that I know of. When I did speak, it was a situation where they didn't know how to deal with it. So although it wasn't shunned upon, it also wasn't encouraged. And so I got the picture fairly quick that these were simply experiences that I was going to have, that nobody else really had them, and that I needed to keep it under hat, per se. Mm-hmm. The events that transpired at any given time, depending on how spirit came to me, we talk of spirit from an aspect of someone who has passed, who has lived in a physical body, and who is now into another realm, whether they're fully crossed and sometimes not. And I found that once I became aware of what was happening, that many times the spirit that would come to me were people who hadn't made the transition into the fully into the great mystery, and they were looking for help. The other thing and energies that I connected to were the animals. And funny enough, even the trees. I had great connection with trees. If I wasn't riding my horse or out with my animals, I was climbing trees and sitting and reading books in trees. So I found a great connection to my environment, and I believe that's what helped me through the adversity of being afraid when I didn't understand what was happening.
It sounds like you had, from a really young age, a connection to shamanism. When did you actually start practicing it as an adult, and how did you, what drew you to that practice?
I actually was drawn to Wicca at an earlier age, which is another form of shamanism, at about 14 or 15 years old. And it wasn't until my late 20s that I fully stepped in. You know, life got busy, and kids and family and all of those things became a priority in my world. And then in my late 20s, I had a very impactful experience with a spirit, not in this country, but in England. And that prompted me to finally realize that I needed to do more with this than what I was doing. And so I stepped into shamanism originally because I wanted to honor my own heritage, which is Austrian and German and Norwegian. I wanted to honor that lineage. And so I looked for a teacher that knew the ins and outs of what I was looking for. And spirit, as it always does in the universe, brought to me a beautiful teacher. And she taught me many things. And then I got such a taste for it. And it was like a fish to water. The mediumship that I was already working in, and the trance work, and all of those things just all molded in together, and I finally felt at home. That was in my early 30s. Yeah.
And so with all that practice, when was it that you realized that you had that you could actually name what you were doing, that you had a gift for what you call death walking and midwifery, death midwifery?
Well, I knew at a fairly young age that I was very attracted to helping people pass, and that I was very connected to helping people who had already passed. So when my first teacher actually brought up the death walking and psychopomp aspect of shamanism, I knew that was my place, but I didn't know how it would all transpire. And what that modality had a belief system around was that this gift of helping people cross was only given to a person for a short period of time, like a maximum of a few years, and that when this gift was given to you, that you needed to step into it fully and honor it fully and do your work until it was released of you. And when that was spoken, I didn't believe it, to be honest. I knew that my whole existence was around that, and that I couldn't possibly have this gift from a child to an adult and not have it follow through even more. And so with that belief system, I accepted and honored it, of course. But I also knew that it was not my path. Mm-hmm. And I knew that my path would extend longer than that.
So then, I guess the thing that makes me curious as a shamanic practitioner myself is there's this concept sometimes that, you know, the spirit world is all light and fluffy, and it's not. There's a lot of gray zones and even dark stuff that you come across sometimes when traveling the spiritual realm. So it takes training to travel those realms safely without causing harm to yourself and others. How did you train in that? And just to give the listeners maybe a feel for, you know, this is really something you have to train yourself for, not something you just jump into, you know, without any guidance. How did you do that to make sure that you were traveling those realms safely and not causing harm?
So yes, this is something agreed. That is something that you can't just jump into. Of course, there are those like myself who have a natural ability for it, and who might even be doing it in the consciousness, in the dream time. But it is very important to have protection in place, to know that you're not out there on your own, to call in your helpers, guides, angels, whatever your belief system is, and to make sure that you have the discipline within this realm and in the other realms as well. The discipline is about understanding that neutrality is most important, that stepping into a place of neutrality helps you see fully the picture and helps you deal with someone who may not be in that neutrality. To be able to find balance as best we can as humans is an important and always a constant goal. When we work in the other realms, the most important thing is that we stay in a place of neutrality, that we stay out of the ego, and that we are not in a reactive state. Yes, you're right, Jen. There is where there is light, there is shadow. And low vibration, high vibration is one of the ways that I see that energetically. And we are never alone, no matter in this realm or others. And to have that assistance and to know who to call on. And even if we don't know names or are visual about it, but to trust and know that those energies are with us to assist us is the most important.
And to be able to decipher how you would actually know that it's an energetic that's friendly or not, what is the voice of spirit? What is your own high self guiding you? All of those things are pretty important, I've learned too.
Yes.
Because, you want to make sure that the information that you are receiving is accurate. Now, so what do you do as a shamanic death walker and a death midwife? What is your... Can you walk us through how you would work with somebody who is either crossing over or just crossed over?
Sure. What I can do is walk you through both processes, because it is two sides of the same coin. As a death midwife, from the physical aspect, relationship is usually brought, sometimes if we're lucky, I get to spend some time with the person who's passing. And what we do if that person is wanting to, is to kind of clean house before we go. So it's about making right relationship within themselves and with others to the best of their abilities, and having conversations about what death looks like, asking questions, creating visuals, meditation about connecting them with their higher selves, about connecting them with spirit, their own and with their helpers, and what that looks like to them and them personally. My goal isn't to create a perspective of my belief system. My goal is to help someone find their own relationship with death and their own relationship with spirit in that time. Sometimes we have understanding of those pieces. And with those people, then we work with a visual about what we want when we go. The important thing to understand about our passing and stepping into the great mystery is that just as we create what we are and who we are here, we create that as we pass. Our thoughts, our emotions affect our living and they affect our dying. And so what I do as a death midwife is I, to the best of my ability, try to bring in a space that is inducive to having spirit connected and a calm and a quiet. And sometimes it's not quiet. Sometimes it's big and loud and beautiful. It depends on the spirit that's going because, of course, like every birth is different, every death is different. I then, if once the time has come, I help the individual release out of the body with ease. So it becomes an easy birthing, essentially, into the other realm. The delivery process of a birth is much like the delivery process of a death. There is warriorship in it. There is a process, but it is beautiful just as much on the way out as it is on the way in. And so what I do then is send my energetics into the other realm, and I meet with them on the other side. And depending on what the truth is for that individual, takes us on a journey and what they want and need. Oftentimes people need time, of course, to process. And so it takes a while to separate from the physical, from the body. And we often don't want to leave until a funeral or a memorial happens. Sometimes, especially I find with people who have dealt with a lot of pain before they go, sometimes they're just ready to go for the light and ready to go and step into that mystery and have that raised vibration. But sometimes we want to wait. We want to stay. And what I do is I hold them within a energetic that allows them the freedom to be wherever they wish to be, because that sends them there. But I hold them in a place of safety so that they have the energy to keep their presence until it is time to go. You see, as we separate from the body, we lose focus of our earth lifetime. And that's where sometimes people can get lost. Because either through a traumatic death, a very fast death, we can go into trauma and get lost. Or sometimes now with the new processes of memorials and cremation, sometimes we don't have those celebrations or funerals or whatever you want to call them until months later. And if someone is not really wanting to leave the realm until that celebration or that funeral or gathering has happened, then they can lose focus, mm-hmm. and then slowly can become lost in the other realm. Mm-hmm. So what I do is I help them get across, and I hold them so that and give them energy so that they can keep the focus.
Okay, so I want to backtrack a little bit because people that are listening might not know from a shamanic perspective what happens when somebody actually crosses over. So when you say, so you're saying that the spirit leaves the body, mm-hmm. and it goes on to other realms in crossing over. Can you talk a little bit about more about what happens when the spirit does leave their body, or what needs to happen in order for a successful crossing over to happen? Stages,
certainly.
Maybe?
Certainly. In shamanic modality, it is believed that we live in a tonal realm, a Nagual realm, and then the Bardos, which is basically the bridge, the gateway to the great mystery.
Okay, so the tonal is the physical world that we live in.
That's correct.
The Nagual is the spirit world, and then the Bardos is the bridge between the two. Is that what you mean?
The Nagual is actually the space between the physical and the Bardos, the great mystery.
Okay.
So the Nagual is somewhere, when we meditate, we connect with the Nagual. And connect to spirit, to our higher selves. The Nagual is a place where it is considered the in-between place. So it is where spirit can sometimes be lost in. Okay, does that explain it?
Yeah, I'm just trying to get a picture out there so that people understand the terms and just know, like sometimes we take for granted because we practice this stuff.
Exactly.
So I just want to make sure that the people listening aren't going, huh, what's she talking about? I lost her way back there.
Yeah, absolutely.
So why would somebody, before we keep going, why would somebody get lost, like not make the full crossing over back into spirit? Why would they get stuck in the middle? What are some of the reasons?
There can be many reasons. One of the most prominent reasons, I have to say, from my understanding and working with this, is that we as Westerners live in a death-phobic society. So you spoke about talking with Stephen Jenkinson beforehand, so you have a little bit of understanding about that aspect of things, but I'll go a little deeper with it. The concept that death shouldn't be in our lives has done a great injustice for our journey to step into the mystery. Because we don't have the ceremonies, the rites of passage, the awareness of death in our lives like we used to, it has created a phobic concept, a belief system around death. We, in Western society, won't take our children to funerals for fear that we might traumatize them. We, as a medical system, we see that if there's a chance to live, then we should take it, that we should do anything at all costs to avoid death, that if we die, that we fail. So in that moment, when we are about to go, to hold that concept in our minds and to feel that we are doing something that isn't believed in sends us quite often into fear, into denial, into a place of confusion in many occasions. So that's one of the reasons. The issues with a quick passing, someone who doesn't see it coming, can also sometimes affect how we pass. The sheer confusion of not knowing what has actually happened and not having an understanding through rites of passage, through talking about it, through seeing our elders go, of recognizing where we are, can sometimes also cause that issue. The other thing that can keep us here is if we are not in acceptance. So anger, resentment, revenge, those things can also hold us into the Nagual and not let us cross all the way over, because we have taken our belief system or our emotional chargedness into the other realms.
Yeah, I know when my grandma passed away, she was quite young. She was only 57, and she was leaving my uncle behind, who was only 17 at the time. And years and years later, when I discovered she hadn't crossed over properly, I realized when I was working with her that part of that was yes, that she didn't feel like she was ready, but the other thing was that sometimes family members can hold people back from crossing too, in the sense that they're not ready. And there's a lot left unresolved. And so in my grandma's case, she wanted to see my uncle grow up. You know, she wanted to be there to make impact in our family. So I had to explain to her, you can't make impact if you stay in that in-between place. Like, you've gotta cross over if you want to make impact so that you can take your place as an ancestor. So it was really interesting, but it was also really hard for me to realize that she had been trying to get our attention all those years. And I was not at a place in my practice yet where I understood those dreams and those messages that she was sending me. But there was definitely a change in energy in our family once she did cross over well. It was like everybody was able to relax a little bit more. So I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about that and maybe the work that you do with family and friends that are left behind so that those folks can cross over well.
Absolutely. And thank you for bringing that up. Yes, we can tend to hold the ones that we love and not want to release them, not have that piece of acceptance. I find that often with animals, with our pets as well, that our human selves will hold their energies through our grief and not want to let them go. And so often they will stay in the household. And with family, it kind of can work the same way. The release of the family, when you have someone who is ready to go and is not fighting it, I find that the release and the acceptance comes much easier for the family as well. The more the one who passes fights, the more the family often will fight. The other aspect is that And what we need to know is if there is, I mean, grief is a incredible thing. And Stephen Jenkinson says it well, grief is a skill. What we also know about grief is that if it's done with a piece of acceptance within it, it actually assists our loved ones to cross over. Mm-hmm. That impactful energy actually pushes and helps and gives energy to the one who is trying to cross over mm-hmm. with acceptance. If the grief comes with a holding, with a fear, with an anxiety, then it can hold the spirit of the person who has crossed. And so that's why the acceptance piece, the wonder piece is so important, because it allows the impact of the energy and the emotion to move through the person and also move through the spirit who is trying to do their final step.
Now, I just want to make clear, because I know there's probably people listening that are like, you know, maybe having a hard time with this thing that grieving is about acceptance, because of course those of us who have lost people or animals that we love know that there's a whole range of emotions. But there are cultures like in Africa where, you know, we don't always know someone's going to die. Sometimes somebody dies really suddenly and we don't have that time to prepare. And to go through all of these steps before the person that we love passes away. So in Africa, I always find it so healthy because they'll grieve for days together as a community, and they grieve all of those things. They experience all these emotions, and that lends energy in their belief system to the people that are crossing over. So I just wanted to maybe clarify that a little bit and maybe give you a chance to speak a little bit about when you say grieving is a skill, or Stephen Jenkinson says it's grieving is not an emotion, it's something that you do. What does that look like? What could that look like for people that are left behind?
It can have as many different faces as we as people have faces. But what I'd like to say about grief is that grief is our connection to loss. And grief doesn't always equal death. Grief is about experiencing our humanness at its base level. Grief is about honoring just as much about our emotions and who we are as it is honoring who we may be or an event that we may be grieving over. The process of grief, there are, you know, the psychological aspects of grief and how there's books written about the many phases of grief. And I find that everybody goes through those phases differently, and that you never are completely through. It is something that lives with you forever because it's supposed to. It's supposed to bring you to a place of gratitude at the same time that it takes you to a place of sadness. And the process is about honoring the whole aspect of life. And that if we look at it that way, you know, there's also another saying, and I love to put them together. Grief is a skill, and happiness is a practice. To put those together creates a wholeness and an awareness that allows us to live well and die well. And that's what my understanding of grief as a skill is. It's about knowing that it's not something that's going to ever go away. It is about learning to live with it, learning to be with it, and learning to let it flow through us, just like we learn to let emotions flow through us.
Yeah, see, for me, grieving and gratitude are together. I remember when I started studying shamanism, and our teacher, our mutual teacher that you and I share, had us go after our death guide animal in a drone journey. And I was completely mystified. I'm in my 30s and I'm like, why do I need this animal? Like, I'm not planning on going anywhere. You know, like, what the heck, you crazy lady? But what she said to me was really interesting, and it goes along with the rites of passage piece, where she said, you know, humans experience so many transitions and losses in their lives. They're little ones. Sometimes it's like a transition from one job to another. Sometimes it's a transition in relationships. Sometimes it's a catastrophic loss. You know, there's so many of these things, little and big. And what that animal teaches you how to do is how to do all those transitions, no matter how small or big they are in your life. So that by the time you get to your death, it's not a mystery how to do a transition. Like, you already have a lot of practice with all these transitions you've done in your life. And that really helped me, because I realized how I do these transitions in my life is probably going to be the way that I die too. And if I can't learn how to do these transitions with grace and to do the grieving pieces that comes with all the losses that I go through, but also to come out the other side with deeper gratitude for my life, then I probably won't be able to do that at my death either, or it's going to be a lot more challenging. So it's interesting to me as a shamanic practitioner, because I realize those are the rites of passage that we've lost by not doing all of these pieces in our society that used to be ingrained in societies. We've lost this ability to not only grieve well, but not live well either at the same time. And I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about what grieving has to do with living in your experience.
Yes. Every step of trust and surrender, where we give ourselves over to something that's bigger than us, love, grief, children, even the compassion for humanity and for animals or for our planet, is really just a practice and a preparation for dying. And that's what grief is. Grief is recognizing that it is just as much a rite of passage to our life and our death. And it is a reminder that we can do this well, or we can do it messy. Mm-hmm. It's one of the things that I speak about with my clients is we often live the way we die. Or sorry, we often die the way we live.
And vice versa.
And vice versa, yes. And so... yeah, that was quite apropos, wasn't it? and so what does it look like? You know, are you in fear? Are you in anxiety? Are you angry? Are you living every moment in its fullest? Are you in grief constantly? Are you in depression? Are you in a high vibration through your day most of the time, or are you in a low vibration? You know, those aspect of things, when you look at it in your life, then it becomes a little bit clear about what you need to do to clean up or to embrace what you want when you pass. And so grieving is a reminder. Grieving is a process that is can be a beautiful thing. If we become an effect of grieving, like we become an effect of our emotions, then that can create chaos. Mm. You know, we need to remember that our emotions are information, and that if we are overly emotional, it means that we are overly mental and that we need to care for what our inner dialogue looks like. Mm. So if we, in the beginning of a loss, of course, we are going to be fully in it. And that is where we're supposed to be. And as time shifts and as the energy shifts with the person that is also crossing, our energy shifts as well. And to just be in the process and to not put so much pressure on ourselves about what grief should look like. And well, you know, I had my neighbor, I know my neighbor lost her husband and she was good and remarried within a year. So why can't I do that? You know, we can't go to the outside to look at what works for us. We have to go to our inner world and we have to go to a place of acceptance and a place of, a warriorship, a place where we trust in ourselves, that we're doing everything that we can to work with the process and know that it never really goes. It's not supposed to. One of the things that we don't do, and this is another sort of rite of passage in a way, but it's a daily process that we don't do anymore, which is we don't acknowledge what has to die for us to live, for what sustains us, what has to die for us to sustain ourselves. When we look at that daily, and it's not just what we put in our mouths, it's also what we live in. It's what we walk on. It's what we drive through. What had to die in order to sustain us? When we start honoring those things, then death becomes more of an honoring, and grief becomes more of an honoring instead of a pain and an affliction and being victim to it. Mm-hmm.
And the one thing I've learned from death, from all of learning how to grieve these losses, is that there are always gifts in the losses. And sometimes they're really hard to find at the beginning or when you're, you know, when I'm going through the messiest part of it. But I know that afterwards, sometimes looking back in retrospect, I'll understand what the gift was. And so to me, we not only live in a death phobic society, but in a change phobic. People seem to want things to stay the same because even if it's not completely comfortable the way things are, it's known. And that's better for people, for most people, than feeling like they're in an unknown space. But, you know, the one thing I've learned is that there's way more unknowns in life than knowns. And so for me, it's also a piece of learning how to ride that wave of change and find out through every experience what isn't serving me. You know, even if it's become comfortable, what do I need to let go of so that new thing that I want to bring into my life can come in? It's kind of like a house, right? Like if I keep my house really cluttered and I just keep collecting things, there's not going to be room for new things. So I just wanted that to put that into the space as well, because it has everything to do about learning and living, in my experience.
Agreed, Jen. Agreed. Yeah. Change is again another rite of passage. Really, truly, it is another process to connect us to preparing to die. And we don't think of it that way. But because we live in such a death-phobic society, of course we're going to be afraid of change. We're not going to be in a place where we trust or where we surrender, because we're taught not to do those things. You know, we're taught that our imagination is just our imagination, not that it's our doorway to our spirit, not that it's our doorway to the other realms. We're also taught that it's silly to wonder. You know, you've got to go, be, do, instead of sitting and wondering. To be in wonder is to be in trust and to be in innocence. And we're so caught up in trying to grow up when we're children and be adults when we get there. And then we want to reverse it and not go back, you know. And so there's always this catch up, and there's no wonder. There's no acceptance. There's no hardly any of us trust in the processes of what we're trying to do in our lives. So yes, change is going to be frightening if we don't set our intention for it. If we feel that we're at effect of change and that we're victim of change instead of creating that change and being in flow with it, for sure.
So you also say that it's important to have people in society that can advocate for the dying. Why do you feel that that's important in our world today?
Oh my goodness, because we don't care for our dying. Because we live phobic to death, we live phobic to our dying. We, you know, set maybe two days out of the week to go and see grandma who's in the hospital now and who is reaching the end. We try and schedule death. I mean, we're scheduling births now. Now doctors are scheduling cesareans so that, you know, they're on call when it happens. And we're trying to force that situation into death as well. And we can't. We simply can't. And so there are so many people who, because we're death phobic, we're dying in hospitals, we're not dying at home, we're not dying with our family and in our homes surrounded by our animals and our people and our loved ones. So we often are dying in a place that is not our energetics, does not feed our energetic lives, and most of the time, we're passing alone. Sometimes we choose to pass on our own, and that's our own choice. But what I have to say is that there are so many people living in this phobic society and who are feeling that they're failure because they die. They don't know where they're going. They haven't created a relationship. And so they go with the fear. And so I really, really want us to start talking about this, to start being with it, to start recognizing that we need to advocate a way of being with death that is healthy. You know, we're so pumped about being healthy in our lives, eating healthy, active, healthy. But that is because we're afraid of dying, not because we want to create that healthiness within dying. Mm-hmm. And that's what's so important. I want to see, I'm going to give you an example. When I was 14 years old, I started working in a nursing home, and I fell in love with an older gentleman named Ben. And Ben was a beautiful bronc rider who we connected right away because of my connection, of course, with the rodeo world. And he was a poet and a beautiful, gentle man. And when it was his time to go, the nurses knew that him and I had a connection. And so they phoned my family home and said, we want to let Wanda know that Ben is close to passing. So my parents took me in, and I sat by his bed. And he called for a name that wasn't mine. He was calling for someone that he loved who had already passed. And in that moment, at 14, I didn't know what to do. But instinctively, what I knew was that he couldn't see me anymore. And what I knew was that he needed to feel her. And so I held his hand and I put my head on his chest. And I said, I'm here. And within about 15 minutes, he had taken his last breath and passed. So what I know is that we need to be in our instinct and that we need to step out of the hospital, what's the word I'm looking for? Clinical, germ-phobic pieces, and be able to put our head on the chest of either a loved one or a stranger and not worry about the consequences.
Well, Wanda, you've given us certainly a lot to sit with and ruminate with, and I thank you very much for being with us today.
You're very welcome. It was a huge pleasure, Jen.
Come back anytime.
Thank you. If you don't mind, could I end with a bit of an invocation?
Sure.
It's just very quick, but I think that it is a beautiful piece to end with.
Go for it.
Mothers, grandmothers, all our ancestors, come near to us. Bring us peace. Fathers, grandfathers, all our ancestors, guide us, bless us as we draw nearer and nearer to you. Aho.
Aho. To find out more about Wanda Buchleitner-Garsad's practice, visit her website at www.walkingsoulwisdom.com. That's Walking Soul Wisdom, all one word, all lowercase.com. Thank you to Marielle Smith, the producer of this show, and for all of you for lending us your ear and spending your time with us tonight. Aloha till next time.